good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. In the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us tonight Professor Boyd Haley, and he is the chairman of the Department of Chemistry at the Kentucky University of Kentucky. And of course, we're going to be talking about an incredible subject. If you're not acquainted with it, you're going to say, well, this couldn't be true. I mean, after all, if this were true, everybody would know about it. And the problem is, it is true, and very, very few people know about it. I'll never forget when I was studying to be an orthopedic surgeon. I was a resident at Merritt Hospital in Oakland, and one of our doctors there, this was 50 years ago, 1955. And certainly this doctor had been well trained. He was from Mayo Clinic, but he had an odd idea, and that was that if you pulled out your teeth on your patients, a lot of the chronic complaints they had would get better. And we all sort of laughed at him. I mean, you know, but we know that a lot of his patients did get better. He was very well thought of, and that thought has always been in the back of my mind. Why would pulling out teeth on people with these chronic musculoskeletal conditions influence their course of their disease? And then, of course, I took up at one time in my career, I traveled all over the world to learn acupuncture. And one of the things the acupuncturist talked about is nothing else helps why you go ahead and you get the dental fillings out. And, you know, but I always had sort of an uneasy feeling about that. It seemed like an awful lot of work to take out the fillings. And eventually, of course, I gave up acupuncture because I was a surgeon. And but, you know, at least I learned what other people were thinking. But it really wasn't until recently when I heard Professor Haley talking about, of course, the influence of mercury and the toxicity of mercury in fillings, that I began to catch a glimpse of perhaps what this was really all about. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome. Well, my pleasure.
Why don't you just go ahead and how was it that you became aware of the fact that there were real problems with dental fillings? And you actually were working certainly on Alzheimer's disease long before you began looking at mercury fillings, weren't you?
Yes, I was working on Alzheimer's disease for some time, and we'd published a few papers on some biochemical aberrancies that, you know, occurred in Alzheimer's disease brain compared to, you know, age-matched normal controls. And, you know, to cut to the chase, what I found was that we started looking for toxins that might mimic the effects you see in Alzheimer's disease. In other words, something you could add to a control brain or expose a control rat to that would develop the biochemical aberrancies you see in Alzheimer's disease brain. And what our research showed is that mercury and only mercury would do that. That got me invited and exposed to a group called the International Academy of Oral and Medical Toxicology. They invited me to give a talk at their conference, and then they exposed me to the concept that there was mercury coming out of my amalgam fillings. And to tell you the truth, I didn't believe them. I had to prove it to myself. And then I had one dentist send me a package of, you know, that you could make amalgam fillings with. And I made amalgam fillings in a mold, and we tested them in my laboratory. And basically, since then, I've been in a fight, like I call it the 12-year fight with the town drunk. You tell people, it seems silly even to sit here on the radio and say that in dentistry they put amalgam fillings, which are 50% of the most neurotoxic metal that a man can reasonably be exposed to, thought to be exposed to. It comes out, any chemist can measure it, any high school kid can measure it, and yet the dentists deny that. And it's just a preposterous statement. And then I get put in a position where that it's really okay if a person gets amalgams put in their mouth when they're 8 years old, and they can keep them in there until they're 68 or 78 years old, and this constant exposure to a low level of mercury wouldn't cause any problems. With mercury being the most neurotoxic metal, you know, that we know about, you know, other than a couple of radioactive compounds, a couple of radioactive elements. So that we're in this preposterous situation, and then you go to the government, and you realize that amalgams were grandfathered in when the FDA was formed in 1930, and one of the FDA, well, the major FDA person in the dental branch, admitted that the FDA has never tested the safety of dental amalgams, and yet we're supposed to believe it. And what they do is they believe the fact that, you know, the cursory observations of a dentist, or all dentists, indicate that they're safe. And, you know, it's preposterous. You know, it's just a real bad situation, especially when you consider how many of you have ever gone to a dentist and had them ask you, are you on, you know, penny dialysis instrument, I mean, treatment? Because mercury is also known to be one of the most potent toxins of the kidney. And we have thousands of people on kidney dialysis, and yet the dentist willingly put amalgams in their mouth and helped them suffer even more.
Well, you know, of course, we hear a great deal about the danger of eating swordfish or tuna fish because there's mercury in them. And certainly there was one instance over in Japan, as I remember, where there was mercury was a byproduct of something produced in that area, and it went out in the lagoon, and everybody was eating the shellfish there, and they were getting mercury poisoning. But, you know, they tell mothers, pregnant mothers, that they shouldn't be eating tuna fish now because, of course, the mercury will get through to their child. And yet, of course, the amount of amalgam in the mother's mouth really will determine the level of mercury in that child. Now, let's talk a little bit about how people can actually convince themselves that mercury is given off. Because I've seen your videos and you can actually see the fumes rising off that film. Would you like to describe that a little bit and how you were able to actually to measure that, the mercury vaporization from fillings that had been in the mouth for many years?
Yes, it's a simple chemistry trick. It's not a trick. I mean, it's just a way to analyze it. And by the way, that video was done, you know, by Christy Demon in Uninformed Consent. Anybody can go to www.uninformedconsent and read and see that video if they're inclined to do so. It is something that we used to do in a class that I teach called Mercury Science and Politics. And what you do is you use a fluorescent screen, you turn the lights out in the room, you hold an amalgam filling in front of that screen, and you shine an ultraviolet light on it, UV light. And that's a mercury lamp, and the mercury lamp puts out a wavelength of light that's absorbed primarily by mercury. And you can see the vapors come off, and in our class we have the students look at the rate of mercury vapor that's coming off, and then they abrade the amalgam with a toothbrush, and they see that it increases it dramatically. And then I have them take a mercury vapor sniffer, a Gerald mercury vapor sniffer that, you know, EPA and OSHA use to detect mercury in factories, and they go up next to the amalgam filling, and they take a sample of that air, and they see that, indeed, that's really mercury, and that is quite a bit.
Well, you know, I think the most amazing thing is that 75 or more years ago, the dentists didn't use mercury amalgam fillings because they knew it was toxic. And then what's that whole incredible story about? Because, you know, many, many years ago, long before most of today's dentists were born, why, dentists recognized the danger. In fact, you couldn't be an ethical dentist if you actually used mercury fillings. What's that all about?
Well, in the 1830s, you know, the dentistry in this country was mostly organized around what they called the American College of Dental Surgeons, and to be in that group, you had to sign a declaration saying that you would not place mercury in the mouths of your patients, because people knew about Mad Hatter's disease, you know, where people worked with mercury. Mercury is well known to be extremely toxic. However, there was the Concourse brother came over from England. I think they were French origin, but they came over from England, and they started placing mercury-containing fillings in the mouths of people in their cavities, and it worked quite well. And see, there's almost no doubt that, you know, amalgam makes a good tooth-filling material if you don't mind being exposed to mercury. I mean, you know, it hardens, it's very pliable, it's easy to place, you know, it's very forgiving. You can put it in a wet socket. So, and when in essence, you know, people who didn't have much money could get their fillings, because it was rather inexpensive compared to gold, which was the only other option at that time. Some other options like hot lead, but none of them that we'd want. So that's how it took off. basically because they could do it cheaper and better. But at the same time, you know, back in the 1830s, the average American didn't live to be probably much more than 42, 43 years old. In early 1900s, it was 50 years old. And, but now today we're having people live to be 78 on the average. And so they're keeping the amalgams in their filling past the age where they are capable of excreting that mercury. I mean, as we age, we lose the ability to make several compounds that monitor and keep our bodies healthy from heavy metal toxicity. For example, melatonin levels drop. Melatonin levels control the synthesis of glutathione, and glutathione levels in our bodies drop as we age, and that glutathione is the molecule that binds mercury and carries it out of the body. And so as we age, we reach a point in our life where we can no longer handle the mercury that's coming out of our amalgam fillings, in my opinion.
And of course, then we get this cumulative effect, and you actually find changes in the brain that's certainly compatible with chronic mercury poisoning.
Yes, and this is one thing that really aggravates me. The American Dental Association will say there is absolutely no proof that mercury causes any kind of damage. Yet the publications that are out there, not just by me, I mean, I started a lot of it, bulk of it, with regard to Alzheimer's disease, showing that mercury caused the same effect on the major brain protein called tuberin, causing it to abnormally aggregate and become insoluble in the brain. You can make that happen with mercury. And since then, you know, some work by the researchers at the University of Calgary in Canada and a research university in Italy have shown that the mercury generates, you know, basically all of the tenets of what we look at as diagnostic hallmarks of Alzheimer's disease.
But and of course, they really don't want to admit this for many, many reasons, because think of the implications of that. Now, of course, the dentists themselves really, in many respects, are victims of this, because don't they get a far greater mercury exposure than even their patients do?
Well, if they're not careful and if they replace a lot of amalgams, yes, they do. And there's been studies showing that they have some adverse effects. Although I think the major thing is how many you have in your mouth and what is your genetics. And I would say that, you know, in my opinion, the real victims of this ruse are the dentists. I mean, they go to dental school and their professors tell them that mercury doesn't come out of amalgams at any level that would cause any problems. And yet they don't have any science to back that statement up.
Well, now, of course, don't you actually increase the amount of mercury that comes off? It's simply in the process of chewing or chewing hard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or putting it in hot water. I have my students do those studies, you know. And not only that, we don't just do it by looking at it with a UV lamp. We've made amalgams like the size of a baby aspirin, and we know the weight and the surface area of that amalgam. And we place it in a sealed container with 50 mLs of water. And at the end of the day, we pour that water out, and we measure the mercury in that water. We add another 50 mLs, and we do that several days in a row. And we've averaged, and it comes out with a very popular filling to be about 4.5 micrograms per centimeter squared per day. If you take that amalgam and hold it with a pair of tweezers and brush it two times that day, 30 seconds each time with a medium bristle toothbrush, the level goes up to about 47 micrograms per centimeter squared per day. So braiding an amalgam filling makes it, you know, release a lot more mercury.
Well, now, of course, I'm sure that you must have talked to dental groups about this and tried to get them to realize the danger, not only for the patients, but the potential danger if they persist in putting these things in. It's one thing to put them in when you don't know there's a problem, but when you've been told there's a problem and you continue putting in the mercury, then this could really suggest that you're responsible for what the outcome of what's going on. Is there a move within dentistry at all to begin backing away from mercury fillings and get into ceramic or composite, these other types of fillings?
Yeah, to the credit of you know, the general practicing dentist, there's been a dramatic decrease in those that will place amalgam fillings. And when I have talked to them, I have gone, I've walked into dental study groups, you know, there'll be 25 to 35 dentists, and they initially introduced me as the enemy. And, you know, and when I would go in, they'd have their lunch in the evenings, you know, and they'd have their meeting, and they'd ask me if I would come and talk, I think with the idea of intellectually beating me up. I mean, not to physically beat me up. And by the time I got through, I mean, I was supposed to be there for 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, I'd be there 2 or 3 hours answering their questions, and they would be very upset at the fact that here's all this data that they were told didn't exist. You know, the proof. I mean, for example, in the disease idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy, or IDCM, this is where young people die because their hearts don't develop properly. The level of mercury in their heart tissue is 22,000 times higher than it is in people who die, you know, of other forms of heart disease. So we know, and where does that mercury come from? These are inner city kids or kids in the Midwest playing football. And so anyone that says that having mercury in your mouth won't collect in your tissues just is poorly read scientifically. I mean, they just are not reading the literature at all, or they're ignoring anything that's being published by medical types.
And I really think the real problem is that I don't think that the dentists are intentionally doing anything to harm people any more than the average doctor would do anything to harm one of his patients. But, you know, if they're not told, and this is not mentioned at their dental meetings, and it's certainly not written up in their dental journals, the dentist has no way of knowing, unless, of course, they get hold of your material or some of our material, and they go to their dentist and explain the facts of life to him and ask him at least to check out the sources of information. Now, you have an excellent website, don't you?
It's a website that we put together because people kept asking me, primarily dentists who were being sued or taken to a dental by the state boards, you know, for saying that amalgams are unsafe.
Dentists that were telling the truth.
Yeah, dentists that were telling the truth, practicing freedom of speech and then losing their license for doing so. So I started putting, along with the Dr. Kurt Pendergrass, who works for me at that time, we built a website, and but primarily, you know, Dr. Pendergrass had, you know, had a lot of time, and I said, well, let's just find every article we can find on mercury toxicity, both pro and con, by the way. I mean, you go on there, you get the whole load. I mean, even some of the things that I disagree with are on that website. But if it made it into a refereed publication, we try to get it on that website. And so there are thousands of articles on there about mercury toxicity and work on, you know, the toxicity of amalgam fillings.
And what is that website?
It's www.testfoundation, all one word, testfoundation.org. And we're not selling anything. You just go there and you know, and it's there to help people who get into legal fights with dental organizations who think that they shouldn't be telling patients that mercury comes out of amalgam fillings. So now they don't have to tell them. They say, go read this website.
Well, I think that this is really the tragedy. Now, the laws vary in every state, but in certain states, I mean, the Dental Association will go after dentists who try to tell their patients the truth, and they get reported, you know, as telling people that amalgam can be harmful. They can lose their license or just come under tremendous harassment. So here is some place that people can go and get the scientific facts. I think here in California, why you are allowed at least to tell the patients that there is at least a question of that, and we'll be having a local dentist on here in a couple of weeks, and he can, of course, bring us up to date. But, of course, he is well aware of the danger of dental amalgam, and he actually takes it out. He's actually heard Dr. Haley, some of Dr. Haley's talks, and I was really very impressed and certainly encouraged me to get him onto our program. So you have to understand that mercury is accumulative. It has a predilection for the brain, that the tissues in Alzheimer's disease have showed changes that can be ascribed only to mercury. And the fact that it's in the mouth, now, is there any relationship to the fact that it's in the mouth rather than in other areas of the body? Does mercury have more predilection to get to the brain because of its proximity to the brain?
Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, the mercury is a hydrophobic gas, and it penetrates the nasal mucosa. And when you're breathing, it's taken up in the nose, and the nasal mucosa has, you know, pretty fast access to the brain while it's still, you know, an uncharged gas. And when it gets in the brain, it gets oxidized, and that's when it becomes toxic.
Now, we're going to have to interrupt you in a minute. We're going to have to take a break as far as our listeners up in the Great Northwest. When we get back, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Haley, who is the chairman of the Department of Chemistry at the University of Kentucky. And, of course, he is doing everything he can to awaken people to the very real danger of mercury and amalgam fillings. And, of course, we have other accesses to it, but this is something that involves most people in the United States. And the fact that actually the mercury can actually be vented, can actually come off of those fillings, to me was the most amazing revelation. And yet, of course, once you've seen the videos, and I will tell you probably in the next hour how you can actually see that. There is a website, though. How can people get that website that shows the mercury coming off the fillings?
They just go to type in uninformed consent, all one word, .com, item is there, along with some other items that you can look at.
All right.
It does show the mercury vapor come up, and it's hard. You know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, and a movie's worth 50,000 words. That's what it comes down to. And I would point out to the listening audience there that, in Sweden, they will no longer pay. The government will no longer pay for people to have amalgam fillings placed. In contrast, what they will do is they will pay to have your amalgam fillings removed, because they have found out in a large study of around 900 patients that if you remove the amalgam fillings from patients carefully and put them on, antioxidant vitamins and supplementation, that a lot of these people got markedly better from their neurological symptoms. And so, and it's not only there. In Japan, they don't even teach the placement of amalgam fillings anymore. In Switzerland, it's the same thing. And a lot of the countries in Europe, including Canada, recommend that you do not place amalgam fillings in mothers that are going to be of childbearing age or in small children. And the National Academy of Sciences and the Environmental Protection Agency both agreed that somewhere between 8% and 10% of American women of childbearing age have such high mercury body burdens as to render any child they give birth to, a danger of being born with neurological problems.
And yet, of course, the average American has no idea about any of the things you're talking about, and I've had my ear fairly close to the ground for a long time, and it wasn't until recently, talking to you and a few other people and some dentists, that I became aware of this, and the fact that other countries have just simply refusing to allow this to amalgam fillings to be used, then why don't we hear about this from Tom Brokaw? And Barbara Walters, and there seems to be almost a conscious effort to suppress this. Have there been any major programs? There was one major program that dealt with this toxicity, wasn't there?
Yeah, they've had one, and the backlash, from advertising, and you got to understand that there are people that put a lot of emphasis on trying to prevent people from talking about this, and see, I've been subpoenaed by American Dental Association lawyers to give some information to them with regard to one charge of a lawyer in California who said that they were involved in not telling the truth to the California people with regard to mercury coming off of amalgams. And so they have a lot of money, and they put a lot of pressure on you.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment. And we have a couple of callers now, and we'll get to those as soon as we hook up again with our affiliates up there in the great state of Washington. So our guest this evening, Professor Haley from the University of Kentucky, and, of course, he is the chairman of the Department of Chemistry, internationally known. We'll be right back. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Dale calling from Washington. What part of Washington do you live in, Dale?
I live in Yakima, Washington.
Okay, fine. Okay, so they got that new 10,000-watt station there. At least they've upped the power on it. Glad to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment?
I do. I have a question, and my question is in regards to the mercury fillings that you guys are talking about. Mm-hmm. I grew up in this state, in Tacoma area, and, I've had plenty of fillings put in my life, and I know... from the job that I do and our program, our dental program allows the white type of filling. I think that might be the one that you should have in your mouth.
Yes, that's a composite use.
And I guess what I was wondering is, do you recommend that someone age 34 like myself would have the current metal fillings in my mouth removed and replaced with the composite?
I would suggest you talk to a physician, and a dentist instead of a research scientist.
Well, I'm just saying because the fact that I'm health conscious and I don't want to have the low level of mercury being released in my mouth over the length of time, I guess.
Okay, let's put it this way. The one argument against placing amalgam fillings is you have to take them out someday. And when you do, you get exposed to a bolus amount. The mercury levels in your blood will go up dramatically because you can swallow small chips of this of the amalgam, and as the drill heats the amalgam, it puts off a lot more vapors, which you can breathe in, which can be absorbed through your skin and your mouth. So, you know, if you're going to have them removed by somebody who knows how to remove them carefully.
And, of course, the thing is to cut down on your exposure to mercury when those amalgam fillings are removed.
Yes. I mean, and there are people they can go to the International Academy of Oral Medical Toxicology website, and they will tell them how to do that.
Now, could you give us that website for Dale?
It's just iaomt.org.
I-A-O-M-T. I-A-O-M-P.org.
M-M-T.
M-T.
Yeah.
Like
medical toxicology for toxicology.
Okay. The International Association of Medical Toxicology, okay?
Medical and oral toxicology.
Okay, and they would sure. They would certainly be able to give you the address of a dentist in your area who is trained in this. It's not something you want to have, just everybody doing.
Right.
And it will lower it. You know, on the average, if you take out, an average of four to five amalgam fillings, it will drop your the mercury blood level by a factor of fivefold.
Okay.
That's been published.
Anything else, Dale?
Just one question. He mentioned something about as you age, there's a component in the body that decreases that carries mercury out. So I felt like if I was going to do it, it'd be better to do it now rather than 10, 20 years from now.
Well, you're right. And okay. Let me tell you, there's also, you can talk to a lot of people that are very health conscious.
Yeah.
They know, if you're going to go in and have amalgams replaced, that day, the day before that, start taking a lot of vitamin C, supplement yourself with selenium. And things that, eat a lot of garlic food, because that does bind mercury and prevents a lot of it from getting into your central nervous system.
Okay, we currently do take a lot of vitamins, including vitamin C and stuff, so that's...
Okay, anything else, Dale?
No, that's great, thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for calling, and tell other people there in Yakima to listen on in. Let's go to Pure Heart calling from Aptos, California. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan, and hi, guest.
Haven't heard from you in a long time.
Oh, but I'm still listening.
Okay.
It's the kids.
Okay.
I'm going to refine on the previous question. If when we're going to have fillings removed, with you say all at once or just a couple per year?
All right, that's a question. Pure Heart wants to know whether or not you're to get them all out of one time or you get a couple out one year and a couple out the next year. I have any thoughts on that at all, or would that be up to the dentist?
Yes, when I got my first research, my wife had 15 amalgam fillings. And what we did, we talked about it, and I thought about it a lot because, she doesn't like going to, it's not that she doesn't like going to a dentist, she doesn't like getting, the needle in the jawbone. And so we did hers a quarter at a time. And I think that's something reasonable. I mean, you don't want to phase it out to where a person's going in and getting, the anesthetist treatment every week. Reasonable people can disagree with that. And so, I would leave that, I'm not a dentist and I'm not a physician. I don't know if there are more painless ways of doing this, and it also depend on how many amalgams you have. But I'm reluctant to give advice in an area where I don't really know all the details.
Okay, anything else, Pure Heart?
Have they done any research on fluoride binding with the mercury? Fluoride being negatively charged and mercury positive, does it bind up mercury?
I haven't done any research because it was all done before I was born. I mean, there's certainly mercury binds to fluoride.
Well, does fluoride tend to carry the mercury into the brain? That would be the question.
Well, mercury forms a semi-covalent bond with the halogens, bromine, and it would change its penetrating properties. Now, I haven't read anything, nor have I done anything myself to show that it increases the amount in the brain, but if you had a lot of fluoride, I think it would definitely have an effect on how well mercury penetrated the membranes.
I was hoping it might carry it out of the body, but I guess it could go in too.
Yeah,
okay.
It goes in too. Okay, thanks so much, Pure Heart.
Okay, bye.
And right now we've got Mike on the line. I'm going to ask Mike to just hang on until after the break here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Radio Liberty, and of course with us on the line from Santa Cruz is Mike. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. You can give us a call. Mike, you have a question or comment?
I've got a question, and it may not be within your guest's field, but when a person goes to have this amalgam removed, there's a question of who pays. And so the healthcare provider might decide that this is cosmetic work, whereas the patient, of course, is interested in having toxic material removed from his mouth. So which way do you think that could go?
Well, I think for the most part, as long as the ADA has the major sway over the insurance companies, you know, they won't pay for the composite fillings. They'll pay, and if you have one replaced, even if it needs replaced, they will just pay up to the value of the amalgam filling and not the composite. Okay. However, there is a person who has a major company in the Chicago area, and he has insisted that his insurance carrier provide the replacement of amalgams with composite fillings. So there is a change in the good, you know, in the good-hearted Americans who realize that it's not a good idea to put mercury in your mouth. So I think you'll see this change in the near future.
I really think that Professor Haley is absolutely right, because I will tell you that off the record, the people here in the Dental Association in California know that they're going to lose this battle. They're just trying to figure out how they can get out and preserve some dignity, because the last thing you want is for the public to know that the dentists have been doing something wrong. And of course, the best thing to do is come forward and say, look, we were wrong, the new evidence shows this, but they're not courageous enough to do that at the present time. But they know there's going to be real problems, and I think this whole thing's going to be changed here, whether it'll be a year or 5 years or 10 years. But I believe that we're going to do exactly what Switzerland has done, and what Sweden has done, and what Japan has done, and we're going to start trying to protect our people. Anything else, Mike?
Well, I just think it's very interesting how they've got their heels dug in so hard on the fluoride issue, and now there's this with the mercury.
There are a lot of issues out there, and that's why you listen to Radio Liberty. Hey, thanks so much, Mike. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mark, calling from Richland, Washington. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I was listening to the program tonight, and I heard you talk a little bit about some of the laws in some of the states. Now, I know in Oregon, there was a law preventing dentists from speaking to their patients.
It wasn't a law. It was a regulation by the Oregon Dental Board.
Yes.
Yes.
But I think that's since been rescinded.
Yeah, your American Civil Liberties Union in Oregon jumped all over them and said a dentist has a right to freedom of speech, and to say the truth is certainly a should be an unabridged right, and so Oregon is unique in that regard.
Okay, anything else, Mark?
I know in Washington they were trying to do the same thing, enact a law, but there was such an outcry from dentists and their patients.
Well, I think, Mark, you know, now we have the Internet. Why, people can get this information. And this is, the Internet is a two-edged sword, but there's a lot of good there. And, of course, we want to utilize the good as long as we can. I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to have free access to the information such as what we're talking about tonight, but for the time being, we do. And let's get people going to these various websites we've been talking about. Test Foundation, that's testfoundation.org, or uninformedconsent.com. Anything else, Mark?
No.
Okay, fine.
I would just like, before we, you know, to let the, you know, the listening public know that there is a bill in Congress to phase out the use of dental amalgams in America. And if we don't do that, if we don't support that law, you know, it won't be very many years and when the United States dentistry will be third world dentistry.
Well, now how can, I've never even heard of that legislation. Who is putting it forward? Is there any people that our listeners should write to? Because we'd like to do everything we can.
Yeah. They should write to their own specific congressman. But the people sponsoring the bill is, you know, Diane Watson from California, from the Los Angeles area, and she's a black female Democrat. And her co-sponsor is Dan Burton from Indiana, who's a white male Republican.
Well, that's an odd couple, but, you know, just because Diane Watson's in favor of it doesn't mean I'm going to be against it. If she's right, I'll back her every step of the way.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that this is not a Republican versus Democrat issue. It's people who are informed. Dan Burton has a child that's autistic, and that's sensitized him to the mercury issue.
Do you know the name of the bill or the number of the bill by any chance?
No, I can't right now. I mean, I think I know it, but if I say it, I might be wrong.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will try to get that number and get it out to you. If not, well, you can certainly look it up on the Internet or give me a call off the air, and we'll track it down. But this is something you can do, and, of course, you create the awareness by having the legislation, and even if they try to put the legislation down, the fact that it's been raised, and if it's raised over and over again, why, eventually people are going to begin to understand what this is all about, and they'll put pressure on their dentist, and their dentist will put pressure on their representatives in the Dental Association. They'll put pressure on the national organization, and hopefully we can, of course, save an awful lot of lives and save an awful lot of people from really a terrible, terrible disease of Alzheimer's disease, which really is increasing, isn't it?
They're saying that there's an epidemic of it coming up, that it's going to be much higher than what many of them expected. But it's not much higher than what I expected. If someone understands that the major implantation of dental amalgam started with the baby boomers after World War II. Before World War II, we were in the Depression. People didn't have the money to go to the dentist. There weren't that many dentists around. People living in, you know, outlying farm countries didn't have easy access to dentistry. But after World War II, the fact that American citizens went to the dentist a lot more, you're now getting them. They're the big experiment, because those people are now reaching the age of 60, where Alzheimer's is starting to come in. Exactly as I said, as you reach a certain age, you can no longer handle that mercury.
Well, is the Alzheimer's disease in any way reversible? Is there any way, if they took out the mercury fillings, and then is there any sort of chemical that will tend to bind the mercury and pull it out of the brain?
The body can take care of itself if you keep it healthy. And people are working on treatment of people for heavy metal toxicity. There's a big push in this area. That's the big push that's in Sweden. They've spent 12 million kroner on this heavy metals biology group to try and get people to, come up with techniques of treating people to allow them to come back with some recovery from a lot of the neurological problems. But right now, to say, do I know an absolute way that absolutely will get all the mercury out of your brain? No one knows.
All right, well, at least they're working on it. I think that's encouraging. Anything else, Mark?
I don't know if I agree with the point that dentists are totally oblivious to this. I remember seeing a local dentist here in the Tri-Cities saying that, well, the FDA says that the stuff is okay, so I'm going to use it.
Well, I think, but we don't know what he knows. Your job is to get to him and say, here's the information, you look it up, and if you reject it, then it's on your hands. But, you know, at least I've told you, and check it out, because you would not want to harm your patients, would you?
No.
I don't think the average dentist really would. But dentists are like sort of sheep, and in many respects, doctors are like sheep, you know, and one goes one way, and they all follow. That's the problem we've got. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
All right,
I'd like to comment on what he said. You know, the FDA has never tested amalgam fillings. The FDA, there is a dental branch at the FDA, and this dental branch is housed with nothing more than ADA dentists who make this statement with absolutely no proof to back up their safety issue. They make that statement. And when they said, well, our panel of experts looked at it, if one goes back and searches through this panel of experts, you find out that these are people that not one of them have ever published a paper, you know, on amalgam safety.
All right. Well, let's go to John from Spokane. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Yes, hello. I wanted to ask back to this IAOMT.org website.
Right.
On this website, can somebody get a list of dentists in their general area that can remove the amalgams? Because I'm possibly interested in looking into this.
All right. The question is, will this organization put you in touch with the people who are focused on this and know how to do it as safely as possible?
That's their purpose. When you get there, you'll get phone numbers and contact information, and they have several hundred members that take lessons and go to classes, you know, when they have their national meeting to teach people how to do that. So, yes, and they will give the names of the mercury-free dentist in your area.
Okay, just out of curiosity, do you have a phone number with that, or do I just need to go to the website?
Well, I do have a phone number if I were in my research office, but I'm in my household and that goes at 7 o'clock, so I don't have it with me.
Okay. No, I understand.
All right. Thanks so much, Sean.
Thank you. You made my evening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, of course, I hope we made the evening for a lot of our listeners, because if this sounds like a revolutionary idea to you, well, it's really not revolutionary. All throughout the world, people are recognizing this. It's just here in America, where we have supposedly freedom of the press and freedom of expression, you're never going to hear about that, and it may make you begin to question what's really going on. Well, anyway, of course, this, you know, with the increase in Alzheimer's disease, a definite relationship between Alzheimer's disease and the incidence of mercury, and knowing, of course, that the mercury fillings continue giving off mercury vapors that are absorbed in the nasal mucosa, and, of course, the proximity to the brain could certainly get that into the brain area. And, of course, there are other things. For instance, recently the vaccine manufacturers took thimerosal out of childhood vaccines. We were giving children in the nursery hepatitis B vaccine with toxic doses of mercury in the hepatitis B vaccine, and telling the parents, oh, we're trying to help your child. And have you looked at all into that, you know, into the effects of the vaccine, thimerosal in vaccines? Is that a little out of your field?
No, that's right in the middle of my field. I got into that, about 4 or 5 years ago, and we have a paper that just came out this last week in the International Journal of Toxicology, and what the paper showed, because, you know, it's a biological hypothesis. You know, the rate of autism has gone up, 600% since 1985 on the average across the United States, and it coincided with the increase or the advent of the mandated vaccine program. I should tell everyone right around. I mean, I'm in favor of vaccinations. I just want safe ones. But Dr. Mark Geyer has published some research showing that using the vaccine adverse effect reporting system of the Centers for Disease Control, and the epidemiology, strongly supports the fact that it is the thimerosal or the mercury-containing compound in vaccines used as a preservative that is causal for autism. In our paper, what we showed is we looked at the mercury in the birth hair of infants. And what we found is that with normal children, the mercury in their birth hair goes up with increasing number of amalgam fillings in the birth mother. In other words, you can show that the mercury is getting out of the mother's amalgam fillings and collecting in the birth hair of these normal children. When you go to the autistics, it was a surprising find. There's almost no mercury in their hair. And yet when you test their bodies have 5 to 6-fold more mercury in their tissues. So what we're seeing is that the autistic children represent a subset of the population that cannot excrete mercury, and they're very susceptible to low-level doses. And this is now, I think this is coming out more and more positive with more and more research that's being done.
And so these children then tend to accumulate it,
yes,
in their tissues, and specifically in the brain, and this then would be responsible for the autism. That's a fascinating thing to contemplate.
Yeah.
What sort of response have you gotten to that paper?
Oh, tremendous. I mean, it's very upsetting to people who want to say that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies made safe vaccines. They don't want to believe this at all, but they can repeat it. It wasn't like it was, this isn't rocket science to measure mercury in hair. And not only that, when I found this, Dan, I went back to the old literature to say, has there anything been done like this on Alzheimer's disease? And there were papers published in the early 1980s, and what they showed is that if you compare age-matched the mercury in the nail tissue, the fingernail tissue, of Alzheimer's patients to age-matched controls, that even though the Alzheimer's patients had higher mercury levels in their body and in their brain, they had much lower levels in their nail tissue. And what this means is that when the mercury gets in your bloodstream, it has to get in your bloodstream to be excreted, to get into the urine and feces to be removed from your body. It has to get in your blood. If it gets in your blood, it gets into your fingernails. If it stays in your tissues, in other words, if the person cannot excrete it from the brain tissue, it builds up in the brain tissue, but that takes it out of the blood. So the level in the blood drops dramatically. And this paper, they published about 3 papers, and the third one said is the mercury in the nail tissue decreased with the severity of the dementia. And that fits into my thing that these people age, they can no longer excrete mercury, and as the disease progresses, they are less and less able to excrete it.
And now, let me just clarify this. In the Alzheimer's disease, do they have more or less mercury in the nails?
less.
Yeah, less mercury in the nose. Like, it's exactly like we're seeing with the children with autism.
That's right. But they have more in their body tissues.
Well, you know, these are frightening things, and something that certainly needs to be brought out. And I certainly respect you for being willing to get on the front lines. And, of course, because this is a battle of ideas. And as long as you're on solid scientific footing, it doesn't matter what the other people say or the names they call you or how they would try to demonize you or discredit you. If you're right, you have to say it. And, of course, eventually, why the truth is going to come out, especially since this is not something that is simply here in the United States. This is throughout the world, and the people in Sweden and the people in Switzerland and the people in Japan have recognized this for a long time. It's just a shame that the people here in the United States are not allowed to know what is going on in other countries. We're just having to sort of reinvent the wheel all over again, aren't we?
Yes, I think there's a lot of emphasis on placing people like me on the, you know, on the fringe. You know, and I've offered to debate them anytime they want to debate in any venue they want. I never make statements without looking up the science that's been published in the, you know, in the research literature done by people that I don't know. And do you find that I have very strong backing on this. However, you know, the people who sell dental products do a lot of advertising, and I think that's the reason you don't see this on the air. The American Dental Association makes most of it, or a lot of its money, by selling, you know, approved by the American Dental Association moniker to put on products, and I think a lot of people don't want to see that go away.
Well, I think that you have to do what's right, and really, I think that's so important. People understand that, you know, in the early 1800s, it was gross malpractice. They didn't have that term at that time, but my understanding was that you couldn't even join this original dental association without signing a pledge that you would not use mercury fillings. And then after these people came from Europe and started pushing this, wasn't it simply that isn't that where the American Dental Association came in, that they began, of course, created a new organization and encouraged the use of mercury fillings?
That's right. The American Dental Association was founded on the concept of using, you know, mercury-containing fillings. There's no doubt about it. And they displaced the American College of Dental Surgeons because they could do more fillings and make more money.
And, of course, the trouble is that we have dentists who never heard any of these things before. I mean, these are people who've gone through their undergraduate and graduate degrees, and they've never read, they've never heard anything. That's why I think it's so important that our listeners out there get tapes of this or other programs we've done on the danger of mercury, and then get it to your dentist, because if your dentist is an honest man, you know, he's at least going to want to begin looking into this to some extent to find out what this is really all about. Well, let's go to Gerda, who's calling us from Benton City in Washington. Hi, Gerda. How are you doing?
Oh, fine. Thank you. You just had a gentleman on that wanted to know where he could get his mercury fillings safely removed.
Right.
And I have a list of all the ones in the state of Washington that will do that.
All right, fine. I'll tell you what. If you would, I'll put you on hold, and we'll get your telephone number. And then if that gentleman would like to call back, would it be all right if then we had him call you and get that?
He sure can.
Whole list. Do you have that posted any place, or would you make that?
Well, I received this from the Tahoma Clinic in Kennewick, the whole list.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to let you put you on hold. I will ask our producer, Jeannie, to get your telephone number. And then if the gentleman who was calling earlier asking about how he could get in touch with the IAOMT, he can probably get that information for you, which may be more extensive. Thank you so very much for calling, Gerda.
Well, you're welcome.
And it's really great because there is a network of people out there who know what's going on, and
right.
If through Radio Liberty, we can give them a voice. So you
right.
Hang on here. We'll have Jeannie.
I'm sorry, though. I'm missing your program.
You're missing my program. Why is that?
Well, I'm turning it. I have to turn it off when I talk to you.
Okay, fine. Well, but as long as you're talking to me while you're getting what's being said, and we'll put you right on the hold, Jeannie. I'll get your telephone number, and hopefully we'll get that other gentleman. Or either that, or could you send me a copy of that list, and I could make it available to anybody up there?
I sure will.
All right. Do you know my address? It's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063.
Post Office 13?
In Santa Cruz, 95063. And then if anybody else...
95? Would you repeat that?
95063. And then, if there wants that list, you can give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'll get it for them. How's that?
That'd be great. I can make a copy of it.
Thank you so much. God bless you, Adam. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Here, our guest this evening is Professor Boyd Haley, and of course, he is the chairman of the Department of Chemistry at the University of Kentucky. Are any of the other chemists across the country addressing this issue, or are they off on other projects?
Well, there are not too many, because the problem and the thing that we've observed, and we've turned this into the Attorney General's office, is that who gets money to do mercury research is a very select group of dental schools. And what's amazing is that for the amount of money that they've received, I mean, you know, a huge number of grant years, they've only published, only maybe one significant paper. And so, it's kind of well known that if you want to do research on mercury toxicity and neurological diseases, that you will not be funded by the National Institutes of Health. They will not fund you for doing that.
Now, in other words, it's not only the American Dental Association, but the National Institute of Health and other government agencies that are going to withhold funds for people who are trying to investigate the toxicity and, of course, the possibility there's a very definite tie-in to Alzheimer's disease?
Well, if you, what I can tell the audience, if they want to go in, into Medline and click in mercury toxicity and neurological diseases, you'll notice that most of the research that's done in this area is done in foreign countries. And very little of it comes out of the National Institutes of Health, basically because the mercury toxicity issue is primarily funded through the National Institutes of Dental and Craniofacial Research. So the dentists and NIH control who gets funding to look at mercury as far as it being, you know, a neurotoxic agent.
And that really is one of the great tragedies of modern times. You know, it would be great if there were independent people of great wealth or some of the great foundations who were willing to fund this sort of thing. But
And they do, by the way. I do have foundation money.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
The Wallace Foundation funds me, and you see, it's now changing. You're seeing that a lot of people, this insight going and the constant hammering by a lot of good citizens who think mercury shouldn't be placed in the mouths of people, and I'm not the only person out there making this statement. And you had the head lead researcher in mercury toxicity from Sweden testify in front of our congressional committee, just saying that many of the things that the American Dental Association spokesman was saying was incorrect, agreeing with me that he was incorrect. So it became very lopsided. So, you know, the information is now getting out, and it's increasing at a good rate at this time.
Now, of course, did you testify before the congressional committee as well?
Yes. Yes, I did. I was there, and a Dr. Max Berlin was there talking about the dangers of exposure to mercury from all sources.
Well, of course, I think it's so important that our listeners out there get hold of the information. You can certainly call Congressman Dan Burton's office in Washington, D.C., and get the number of the bill, and then write to your own congressman and say, look into this. You have an obligation to protect your constituents from a toxic, and since it's already been done away with or outlawed in so many other countries, you know, why can't we do it here? Now, I think it's a terrible thing when we have to go to the federal government. I think the federal government shouldn't be involved in most of these things, but maybe we have no other recourse at this time. At least it's a wonderful educational opportunity, and then I really believe it's up to the people who listen to these programs to check the facts and then start telling their friends, because once their friends begin to realize they're being lied to on this subject, they may very well come to realize they're being lied to on many other subjects as well, and I think that's really so vitally important. Well, now, of course, as far as the legislation, do we have any idea when that legislation will actually be going before Congress? Are they just holding the hearings, or will it be able to get out of committee onto the floor?
Well, it's in committee right now, so that's the key issue. And you can, it's quite well known that the American Dental Association is spending a lot of money lobbying the congressmen to not support this bill.
Well, of course, I dropped out of the American Medical Association many years ago because I didn't believe at all in what they were doing. And, of course, the one way that your dentist can be active in this is simply to drop out of the ADA and
That's right.
I would, the money.
And I would tell, you know, patients, you know, if you have a choice of going to an ADA dentist or a non-ADA dentist, you're going to, you know, check on the non-ADA dentist, because at least he has the conscience to say, I'm not going to support, you know, this bureaucracy that goes around saying it's a great idea to put a toxic metal in the mouths of, you know, pregnant women and children. I mean, you know, it's such a preposterous concept to have to argue that I, you know, that you look at these bureaucrats in the ADA and say, you're telling me, you know, what is the paper that you can publish? You can show me that you published that mercury doesn't come out of amalgam fillings at a toxic rate.
And, of course, the other thing is that what actually happens to the child of a pregnant woman who's got a lot of fillings in, and, of course, you commented that the child will have a higher level of mercury in the brain, but are these children autistic, or how do they present?
Well, you know, I don't think anyone knows. You know, it depends on the genetic susceptibility, you know, of the children, and I think that can come across in several different ways. It's, you know, in Minamata Bay where they had this disaster, which they knew they were looking at mercury toxicity.
This was in Japan.
Yes, you know, the individuals that were affected the most were the children that were in utero when the mother ate the toxic fish. And it actually protected the mother from the toxicity, because the uterus, in utero child will absorb most of the mercury from the mother's blood.
Well, what happened to the child?
Oh, they were demented and had all kinds of bone diseases and deformities, and they didn't live very long. I don't want to scare people and say that, you know, because you have amalgam fillings, your child's going to have severe diseases, because that's not the case. It's just the case is, you know, you are exposing them and you are doing them some damage, and they would be healthier if they weren't exposed to that level of mercury.
All right, we've got Mike back one more time. We're just about out of time.
One question. I can't help but wonder that maybe this whole thing about the mercury in seafood is nothing but a smokescreen for this greater problem that they are unwilling to recognize.
There is no doubt that the major contributor to mercury body burden of Americans is from their dental amalgams, not from fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell you that fish, you know, when they're exposed to mercury, especially seafood, will bind it up with selenium. And so while a person is eating so many micrograms of mercury, most of that goes straight through your body because it's not available, because it's tied up with selenium and it's non-reactive. Whereas the mercury coming off of dental amalgams is totally reactive, 100%.
So maybe, Mike, maybe you're on the right track. Anyway, God bless you. We're out of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I want to thank our guest this evening, Professor Boyd Haley, who, of course, is the chairman of the Department of Chemistry at the University of Kentucky. Thank you so very much for being with us. I know it's late back there. I'm going to let you go, but I really appreciate you being with us.
It was my pleasure, Stan.
Good night, and God bless you. All right, fine. Well, that was, of course, Professor Boyd Haley, and, of course, this is the time when we have to, of course, remind our listeners of the Great Northwest that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we have to pay for our time, not only on this station, but stations all across America. As you know, we are on about 59 different outlets now every week, and maybe a lot of them just half an hour, but at least people are hearing the truth that they're not going to get elsewhere. If you believe there's a problem, you'd like to join us in this epic struggle to determine if this nation or any nation under God can long endure, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We have a great book that covers this. It's called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You can certainly get my interviews, copies of this tape, or my other interviews with Dr. Haley. Get the information, get it to your dentist, and help us to get the truth out. So until Monday, when we'll be back with you at the same time, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.